This is a Willets Point Shea Stadium bound 7 express train. The next and last stop is Willets Point Shea Stadium.
Yes, it is the Subway to Shea podcast. Anthony Rivera here with you, talking about all the news and happenings surrounding that team from Queens, the New York Mets. Episode 138 from the Subway to Shea studios in my office. Huge shout out to Mike Silva, who joined the podcast last episode. As you know, Mike is the host of the Talking Mets podcast. You can follow him on X at Talking Mets No G. Podcast is on many platforms, so I'm pretty sure you can find it wherever you listen to. You can also subscribe to his newsletter on Substack. So make sure you're checking out Talking Mets podcast. Now, on to this week's very special episode. And I say that because this weekend we honor a New York Mets legend. Sunday's Dwight Gooden will be honored and have his number raised to the top of Citi Field. Number 16 will be retired and join the ranks of Casey Stengel, Gil Hodges, Tom Seaver, Jackie Robinson, Mike Piazza, Jerry Kuzman, his teammate Keith Hernandez, and most recently, Willie Mays. Also honored up there is William Shea, Bob Murphy, and Ralph Kiner. Joining me to take a look back at the career of the man known as Dr. K is Mets historian, author of the books Mets in Tens and this beauty right here, New York Mets All-Time All-Stars. You can also check out his channel on YouTube called Retro MLB. It's Brian Wright. Brian, welcome to the Subway to Shea podcast. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Anthony. It's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Oh, so glad to have you on. Let's get right into it. Doc Gooden getting his number retired, number 16. And you look back at his career. I'm going to concentrate mostly on his Mets career. 11 years from 1984 to 1994, 157-85 record, 3.10 ERA, 1,875 strikeouts. He was the rookie of the year, four-time All-Star, Cy Young. He's got the ERA title in 85 for 1.53. In that season, also, he won the pitching triple crown with 24 wins. Like I said, the 1.53 ERA and 268 strikeouts. Brian, it has never been the easiest life and career for Doc, but ever since his return at the closing of Shea Stadium, it feels like he was embraced not only by the fan base, but by Mets ownership as well. Even, you know, going back to the Wilpons, he was inducted in 2010 to the Mets Hall of Fame alongside Darryl Strawberry, Davey Johnson, and Frank Cashin. Now he'll have his number retired, and fitting that it's with Darryl this season. Considering all that has happened, did you ever think there would come a day that we would see Doc Gooden's number retired?
I did once, you know, the Steve Cohen era began, and there was more embracing towards the history of the team and kind of recognizing the past a little bit. And I think with the passage of time, and in the case of both Dwight Gooden and Darryl Strawberry, the understanding that, sure, they didn't, you know, fulfill the expectations, you know, giant expectations that were placed upon them. Darryl really basically when he was drafted, and Dwight Gooden after he put down those first two amazing seasons. But I think once we have a better understanding of, you know, a young player in a huge market like New York and what it could do to that individual, especially if you have, you know, past history of troubles and you know, things that could really affect you. So I think there's more empathy, more understanding, more taking care of individuals in that case. Which, you know, just did not happen in the 80s. And I think they are, you know, they are two test cases in which that there are two prime examples of what can go wrong. That being said, they had great careers as Mets. Specifically Dwight Gooden, with all those numbers you laid out, the Cy Young in 85, Rookie of the Year in 84. So I think now that we have the passage of time, we see that, like, both, you know, not only Darryl, but Dwight Gooden, you know, kind of being more open about their past, and like I said, us kind of embracing ownership, embracing what they meant to this organization. Let's face it, the last championship team, we're now almost 40 years they were on the last championship team. I think we understand how important they were to Mets history. And I think it's deserved. And now that it's here, it's like, this should have been done earlier. So it's, I certainly expected it for a while.
Well, Doc comes up and wins 17 games as a rookie. You mentioned it. He wins the rookie of the year, starts it off, but that 1985 season that really lit up New York and made the Mets much watch, you know, every fifth day. He went 24-4, 1.53 ERA, 268 strikeouts. Is that 1985 season by Doc, is that the best pitched season in Mets history? And I know we could get a little crazy because we got the franchise, we got Seaver. You know, some people argue Seaver's 1969 season where he went 25-7 with a 2.21 ERA and 208 strikeouts. Or you talk about 1971, he went 20-10, but he had a 1.76 ERA. He had 289 strikeouts. You know, there could be an argument here of which season is the best in Mets history for a starting pitcher. Is Doc's 85? Do you think it's Doc's 85? I mean, I don't know if there's a wrong answer here, but you know, what are your thoughts on this?
I think it is. I think when you take into account, I mean, it's not crazy to think about it, but it's you take into account, you said Tom Seaver, you take into account Jacob DeGrom in 2018 and 2019 and what he did in those back-to-back Cy Young seasons. Seaver in the three Cy Young seasons, even 1971, which is a terrific year, and he should have won but didn't because the voters valued wins more. Taking all those into account, Dwight Gooden's 1985 stands out, you know, above all the rest. The ERA, microscopic, 1.53. The ERA plus, which levels out ERAs, is 2.29. I mean, that's insane. And then the 268 strikeouts, which was less than he had the year before. I guess that just shows how great his 84 season was as a 19-year-old. But 268 strikeouts still led the league, and ERA, you know, ERA plus, fielding independent pitching all led the league, 24 victories as well. It's I think relative to, you know, not only the year in which he pitched, but also relative to the other pitchers in Mets history, Seaver and DeGrom, and you know, any other season, you want to take R.A. Dickey's Cy Young season, you want to take, you know, anything else. It's number one.
Do you think Doc would have become the best pitcher in Mets history if he didn't get himself into the trouble that he did? I mean, he was definitely on that path. We definitely, if you look at some of the documentaries, and even Doc talks about it after that 86 season, and even a little sometime during 86 is where he started to meddle in with the, you know, drugs and everything like that. Do you think that he would have been the best pitcher, you know, in Mets history, even over Tom Seaver at the time?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's hard to pinpoint, the drug issues and personal issues as being the reason why he didn't, you know, live up to all the expectations that were placed upon him after those initial couple seasons. You could, you know, certainly make a case that it's, you know, the league caught up to him. You know, 86 was a good year, but certainly not at the level of 84 and 85, which would be hard to match. And, you know, he did have some, you know, great seasons at the end, but he did get hurt. He had the shoulder injury in 1989, which I think limited him to 17 starts. And I think he had like a, you know, a, kind of an okay year. I think he had 2.89 ERA. I'm looking at Baseball Reference. That's a pretty good year. and then 1991, he had another injury. So it was an accumulation of a lot of things, injuries included. So it's hard to just say that the off the field troubles were the only reason, or the primary reason, in fact. So it's difficult to pinpoint something that would say, and it's also hard to say, like, yes, he would have been better than Tom Seaver. It's hard to even top Tom Seaver when healthy and you know, of sound mind and sound body.
I know he mentioned this in a recent interview, or maybe it was during the press conference announcing that he was going to be inducted. But he had mentioned that he reached out to the Mets multiple times in the 90s to kind of, you know, reconcile and finish his career here. Obviously, the Mets didn't take him up on that. I don't blame the Wilpons for not doing it at the time because, you know, they had given him so many chances. But it really would have been, you know, wonderful to see him get that, you know, chance at redemption, if not only, you know, to say he retired as a New York Met.
Yeah, that would have been very interesting. I don't know, like, what part of his career, because his career ended in 2000. I think he had stints with the Astros and the Rays and even the Yankees. And when I think back at the end of Dwight Gooden's career and its connection with the Mets, I think about in 2000. I think it was a doubleheader.
Yeah.
At one first game at Shea, second game at Yankee Stadium, and the first game at Shea Stadium was started by Dwight Gooden. And if I remember correctly, like, that was his career was in the balance, and I don't know how many starts he made after that, but, you know, it's not really coming back to the Mets, but he came back to Shea Stadium and he came back to start, although in an enemy uniform. But I'm not equating that to the same thing as pitching for the Mets, but it felt like a very proper send-off, and I think he got the victory in that game.
And he was really, I know some fans may have harbored stuff during that time, but man, seeing him come back in 2008 at the closing of Shea Stadium and the ovation, I think he got possibly outside of, you know, Mike Piazza, I think he got one of the loudest ovations in his return, just showing that, you know, the Mets fans like still cared about him. You know, he gets into the Hall of Fame, the Mets Hall of Fame in 2010, and now this honor, and, you know, just to see him get emotional over it and talk about it, it's just great to see him back in the fold, back with the Mets. Now, we know that Gary Carter was a major reason for the maturation of Doc as a pitcher. Should he be next on the list of retired numbers? Because we got Keith, we've got Darryl coming up, obviously Doc's this weekend. Is Gary that final missing piece from that 80s team that has to have his number retired?
I think if I had been proposed this question a few years back, the kind of, I would say, callous part of me, or someone that just takes emotion out of it, would have looked at it and said, well, probably not. You know, Gary Carter deserved Hall of Famer, deserved to make it sooner than he did, deserved Mets Hall of Famer and all that. Really had his best years with the Montreal Expos. And he had two great years with the Mets. It happened, fortunately, to coincide with, you know, the World Championship in the end. First year in 85 and then 86 and winning the World Series. So it's really his two prime years with the Mets. So when I take that into account, I go, he played until 89, but was really kind of on fumes then. That is taking emotion out of it. Taking into account not only emotion, you know, he's been passed for 12 years, and also the fact that Keith's in, Doc's in, or will be, Darryl will be. It seems like there's something missing. It seems like that, you know, to complete the set, you got to have all four. So I think it's coming. And I think the way I've seen, not only with these, you know, mid to late 80s Mets, but also like with Willie Mays having his number retired. Look, yeah. Willie Mays only played 2 years, but you kind of factor in, you know, New York National League player. I thought that was a really nice touch that they did. You know, I think some people who probably don't have a great understanding of history of not only baseball, but National League baseball in New York would see that and go, why in the world would they have retire Willie Mays as 24? But I think if you, you know, read, you know, with context, you can see why.
And there's a backstory too with Joan Payson, and there's context too, like you said. So I did not go crazy at the fact that Willie Mays was going to be put up there in a negative way. I thought it was great that they were going to do that, considering how much he played in New York, considering that Joan Payson was kind of a owner of that team and then became owner of the New York Mets and wanted Willie back. She wanted Willie back for so long. So the fact that they, you know, were able to make that work, I think is great.
Oh, I loved it when they did. I thought that was a really nice touch. I thought it was a nice homage to Joan Payson, who should be honored more in Mets history. So I
and
thought
in baseball
it all
history,
in all was really good.
Right? She's not in the Hall of Fame at all.
No, she should be. Yeah, no, I thought it was really, that was really nice. So I think when I'm seeing one of the kind of like the trends I'm noticing with this Steve Cohen regime and the way they're retiring numbers, it seems like Gary Carter is, you know, around the corner.
Now, before we move on from Doc, let's talk about this little collaboration that we kind of did here. We've been talking about it for a couple of months here about doing a video about Doc. And just let everyone know a little bit about it. I'll be voicing it, which I did a little voiceover for, which was very awesome. And just let everybody know what they could be looking. Give them a little, I guess, a tease about it.
Yeah, it's just a nice little video on Dwight Gooden's 1984 season, coinciding with obviously the number retirement and just the 40 year anniversary of that incredible 84 season, which he really just burst onto the scene as a 19-year-old. Was hyped, you know, in the year before, but you know, I don't know if anyone anticipated what would come in 84, making the All-Star game, setting the rookie record for strikeouts, setting the record at the time for most strikeouts per nine innings. It's been, you know, a lot of pitchers have you know, broken that record, but still at the time it was just out of nowhere. And so, yeah, so it's just, you know, a nice video and accompanied with Anthony's wonderful voice. I could never match that. I hate doing voiceover. So yeah, you can get it on Retro MLB, the YouTube page, and we'll definitely be promoting it as well. So it was definitely a labor of love, and I appreciate you're helping out, Anthony.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Don't be too hard on yourself. It took me about, you know, 8 or 9 takes to get the right, you know, emphasis on certain words and making sure that I nailed that correctly. But, you know, what I found interesting about that whole situation is, you know what, we probably, considering how baseball players come up in the league, we might not have seen Doc Gooden in 1984 if Davey Johnson doesn't take over as manager.
No, I mean, he insisted on Dwight Gooden, and it helped that he was the manager of AAA Tidewater when Dwight Gooden was promoted to AAA Tidewater after his single A season finished. Went to Tidewater to pitch in the, you know, minor league World Series and pitch great, helped Tidewater win the minor league World Series. You know, Davey Johnson, the manager, then gets promoted to big league manager and is like, you know, has this inclination to say, hey, why don't we have Dwight Gooden? And I think management was reluctant to do it, was like, oh my goodness, a 19-year-old, why would we put him in the major leagues? And management trusted Davey, and it turned out to be a great choice on the part of Davey and management to do that. So yeah, it helped that there was a confluence of events there. Cause I think if you just had a returning manager, probably wouldn't have the inclination to bring up a 19-year-old.
And I don't know if Frank Cashin initially had that inclination either. Like Davey had to kind of force him on to bringing him on after what you just talked about, like what he had seen from him, especially in that, you know, AAA, you know, World Series. Once again, I'm here with MLB Mets historian and author Brian Wright. Catch all his videos on Retro MLB on YouTube, especially when the Doc one comes up. Like he said, we'll be promoting that, so you guys can check that out, especially before this weekend. Number retirement. Now, last week we lost two members of the Mets family. Jerry Grody and Pat Zachary passed away. Jerry Grody, we'll get into first, 12 years with the Mets, .256 batting average. He had 35 home runs, 357 RBIs, a two-time All-Star in 1968 and 1974. We know him as part of the 1969 Miracle Mets that was world champions. Also a part of the You Gotta Believe 1973 National League champions. He's in the Mets Hall of Fame. He was inducted in 1992. You know, Jerry Grody kind of gets lost in the shuffle considering the Mets have two Major League Baseball Hall of Famers in who we just mentioned earlier, Gary Carter and also Mike Piazza. Where do you rank Jerry Grody when it comes to catchers in this organization?
Yeah, I think he has to be third, but that's no disrespect because, as you said, Gary Carter and Mike Piazza are Hall of Famers. They were both prolific with offensive numbers. Piazza for a longer period of time with the Mets. But Jerry Grody, you know, you mentioned his numbers, but really the numbers don't do him justice when it comes to his impact on those Mets teams. Specifically like 69 and 73, those, you know, just great pitching staffs. He was really instrumental in harnessing those young pitchers, especially in 69 when Seaver's in his third year, Kuzman's in his second full year, Nolan Ryan is coming up, Gary Gentry is a newcomer. That they needed kind of a kind of a forceful person behind the plate, and he was very forceful in that. Kind of, like I said, harnessing them, controlling them, and kind of being a leader on the field behind the plate. When you think about those Mets teams as well, not only is it pitching, but it's defense. And Jerry Grody was not just good at calling pitches; he was good at just being a defensive catcher. Bud Harrelson, Tommy Agee, Bud Harrelson at shortstop, Tommy Agee in center field. That was. Defense and, strength up the middle was a key part of the 69 team, especially. So yeah, Jerry Grody, you look at, again, look at his stats. The key was how the pitchers did and how they kept runs off the board, and they didn't need a lot of runs in order to win games. And of course in 69, they won the sufficient amount. So when I think about Jerry Grody, I think about, leadership, and also how, the pitching staff, sometimes a catcher takes pride in what the pitchers do. And I think that's the case for Jerry Grody. I mean, I think his impact, the result of the pitching staff is a direct, or the results of the pitching staff is a direct, was directly impacted by what Jerry Grody did. So, he's third in terms of like catchers, but I think he was invaluable to that 69 team, and he definitely gets overlooked in terms of that.
Yeah, and you just go over the names again, like Tom Seaver, Jerry Kuzman, Nolan Ryan, Tug McGraw, you throw in there. You said Gary Gentry, John Matlack. I mean, he has caught some of the best pitchers that this organization has produced. And he, like we talked about Gary Carter helping out Doc and those guys, Fernandez and Cone and Rick Aguilera and Bobby Ojeda, Darling, all those guys. The same can be said about, Jerry Grody and what he did for this organization. You talked about him being a defensive catcher. We're just talking about defense right now, because I heard this on the radio that if you're ranking these three catchers, a lot of people are saying Jerry Grody would be the top of the line of those three catchers.
Absolutely. And, it's hard because it's hard to quantify something like this. And maybe the best way to quantify is how the pitching staff does and how many runs are scored, how many runs are prevented and scored by the opposition. But it's also hard because, in terms of best defensive catcher, he was playing at the same time Johnny Bench was playing. And I remember there was a quote, Johnny Bench said this, that, if Jerry Grody was on the Cincinnati Reds, Johnny Bench talking about himself, I'd be a third baseman. That's how much respect Grody had around the league. It didn't always result in gold gloves. I don't think Jerry Grody won any, but as you said, a two-time All-Star. So he just certainly had that respect. And certainly, I think in terms of just like hearing how guys like Seaver and Kuzman and others that saw him, they would tell you like this was, they would kind of justify that he was the best defensive catcher the Mets have ever had.
Now we head on over to the late 70s. Pat Zachary spent 6 years with the Mets, 41-46, a 3.63 ERA. And, especially in that dark ages of Mets baseball, having a 3.63 ERA, I think was pretty good in itself. A one-time All-Star 1978. He did win a world championship with the Cincinnati Reds in 1976. Pitched well for the Mets in his first 2.5 seasons and then tailed off, unfortunately, a part of the Midnight Massacre, that trade that sent Tom Seaver to Cincinnati. The Mets got Zachary, Doug Flynn, Steve Henderson, and Dan Norman in return. None of them were ever going to live up to the hype, especially when the franchise is on the other end of that trade.
Yeah, it's terribly unfair to be kind of known. I was briefly looking at headlines and Pat Zachary, involved in lopsided trade, passes away, which is just like, it's an unfortunate thing to be remembered for that. It's part of he is definitely known in Mets history for being part of that trade. And as you said, it's impossible to, kind of for four players to match Tom Seaver was never going to work. I don't know how many players it would take to match Tom Seaver's impact. So, Pat Zachary is kind of, looped into that event, one of the dark moments in Mets history, not that he had anything to do with it, more because Tom Seaver left. It had nothing to do with, Flynn or Zachary or Norman or Henderson. It was more because Tom Seaver was leaving. And again, as you had pointed out, it was pretty much impossible after Seaver left and eventually Kuzman left Other players from those better years were gone. It was impossible to kind of, you know, to perform well with, you know, crowds dwindling, with just the team around you just not being as strong. And it's kind of you're pitching against the stack deck. And Zachary was one of them. You know, I think Craig Swan was another pitcher who was very good for the team, but relative to the rest of the pitchers around the league, wasn't really, you know, getting the respect because the team wasn't doing well. So Zachary made, you know, he made one All-Star for the Mets in 1978. Had, as you said, ERAs were, you know, yeah, 3.63 ERAs. You talked about, you know, definitely, you know, not bad. It's, you know, for a team that was annually in last place. So it's and he was Rookie of the Year in 1976 with the Reds. So it's not so definitely had a career worth remembering. It just shouldn't be remembered for the Seaver trade in Mets history. That's how we remember it. But there's much more to that.
Yeah, and you know, obviously you weren't going to get the same performance as you would from the franchise of the team. But like I said, you know, those 78, 79, you know, 80 running, he pitched pretty well. I mean, he had a pretty good record on a team that was, you know, labeled as Grant's tomb at Shea Stadium. You know, to have him pitch the way he did for that team during those down times, you know, that definitely a positive, you know, in Mets history. And speaking of Mets history, you know, the Mets moved their Hall of Fame. I don't know. We talked about going to Citi Field. I was there the first two games of the season, and they moved the Hall of Fame from the Rotunda area, which is now just a full-on store. I remember it was connected to you could go into the store after walking through the Hall of Fame. And now they moved the Hall of Fame from the Rotunda, and it's now all the way in the back of Citi Field, where they have Shake Shack and they have the where the kids can do the home run challenge. So it's in that little area. Kind of used to be where season ticket holders can go and, you know, talk to their representatives, but now it's a little section. And I kind of think that what they're doing right now is they're, you know, kind of highlighting, obviously they're highlighting Doc and Daryl in that room, also highlighting Shea Stadium, since it's the anniversary of Shea Stadium this year as well. But they don't have everything out there. They got, you know, some stuff that they had before. It's a lot different now. I don't know what your thoughts are. I don't know if you got to see it at all yet, but or have seen pictures of it. But I feel like the Mets got to do something. I'm thinking that this is a less than permanent spot for this, and that something will happen. But what would you like to see done, you know, to incorporate more of the history of the New York Mets? Because not always great, but we do have great moments a part of Mets history. You label some of these players in your books, and you talk about it in your books. You know, what could the Mets do to, you know, I guess, reinvigorate their Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I think I have not. I heard about it. I have not seen the look of it. I feel like just putting it out way out there in, you know, beyond center field is an interesting spot. And I don't think that's permanent. I agree with you. I don't think that's permanent. I think this is a work in progress. So I'll wait till the finished product before giving my real opinion. I think, you know, I really liked where it was before, and I don't know, maybe they'll do something. I don't know. Maybe they'll put it back there, but I really like, as you had said, the, you know, having the Hall of Fame leading into the store. I think that was a nice place for it. As far as an idea for how to kind of reinvent the Hall of Fame, if that in fact is what they're doing, perhaps just kind of dispersing Mets history throughout the stadium, which they have in a sense. Like, there are a few things, but maybe like kind of some different, maybe like a section of certain parts of Mets history at different areas of the stadium, like different little mini Hall of Fames. I don't know. I'm just brainstorming here around the stadium. So it's kind of like you can take like a walking tour around, but whether it's the concourse, the field level or upper level, I don't know which, or both. But that's just at first thought, that's the first thing that comes to mind as a possible idea. I can't imagine that where they have it now, again, I would have to look at it, but I can't imagine where they have it now is going to be a permanent thing.
Yeah, it's like just too far in the back of the stadium. And I don't know, I feel like it's a less than permanent spot for it. I think they'll eventually do something with it. I know that they moved the Hall of Fame plaques for the players. That's when you go up the rotunda, up the escalator, and those columns now have them on there. Each column has a couple of players on the they have the player plaques on those columns. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully the Mets, and we know Steve Cohen has been all into, you know, giving us a lot of history with the Mets and has done a great job with that and, you know, bringing back Old Timers Day. So I have no doubt that if they do decide to do something, that they'll do this correctly. I definitely hope so. And I definitely think that they will. Brian, before I let you go, you know, this has been a long time coming. So glad we linked up. So glad we collaborated together. Obviously, there'll be more to come. That's for sure. Let everyone know where they can interact with you on social media and what you're working on next.
You can interact with me. I'm at BrianWright86 on X. I'm not very active on there anymore, but I have an account. But RetroMLB is kind of where you can find me now, at RetroMLB on YouTube, at RetroMLB on TikTok, and at Retro_MLB on Instagram. So you can find me there. As far as what I got upcoming, definitely want to build out the YouTube page. This doc video is certainly a great way to help that. But kind of looking to do more top 10 lists for other teams, some greatest moments for other teams. So exciting things to come. It's a work in progress for me. It's a labor of love, as I had mentioned, especially with the doc video. And I certainly appreciate any help I can get. So Anthony, again, thank you for making lending your voice to this nice video. So it's going to be great.
No, I appreciate you. And like I said, I appreciate your time, and we'll definitely be doing more collaborations together in the future. Thank you so much, and enjoy the doc number retirement ceremony.
Thanks so much. You too, Anthony. Great to be on.
That was Brian Wright, Mets historian, author of the books Mets in Tens and this beauty that I have right here, New York Mets all-time all-stars, and also content creator for Retro MLB channel on YouTube. So make sure you're subscribing to that as well. And that's going to wrap up the Subway to Shea podcast. You can follow on Instagram, X, and TikTok at Subway to Shea. Listen and subscribe to the Subway to Shea podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can watch and subscribe on YouTube as well. If you enjoyed this show, make sure you leave a review. Helps me out, helps out the algorithm. Give me 5 stars. If that would be very great on your end, I would appreciate that. And hit the like button. With that said, thank you for tuning in and helping my podcast grow each and every week. It's a pleasure sharing this content with you, and you continue to be a major part of the success of the Subway to Shea brand, and I appreciate all of you. So for Anthony Rivera, this has been the Subway to Shea podcast. Always remember, let's go Mets.